This is episode 31 of the Reading Coves podcast. If you're a book lover who may be interested in joining our online book club, please visit our website at thereadingcove.com. For June 2013, we're discussing City of Women by David R. Gillam. So hi, I'm Melania in Florida.
I'm Roberta in Georgia.
I'm Monica in Nebraska.
And this month we are discussing the Reading Cove's 151st pick, City of Women by David R. Gillam. What did you guys think? And oh, it was chosen by Cove member Marianne.
I ended up liking it. It was hard to get into in the beginning because he kept going back and forth in time, but he didn't really tell you he was going back and forth in time. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden you're like, what?
Yeah,
what's
like,
what's going on here?
Yeah, I found that really, like, at first it was seamless. You didn't notice it. And then you started noticing it. And then I flipped back. I'm like, wait a minute. This has been going on for a while.
Yeah. And being a history major, I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. This didn't happen in 1943. It was like by then the Jews were in extermination camps. They weren't being singled out wearing the Judenstar and being separate. That happened earlier in Hitler's regime. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, oh, it's a flashback. Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
That was confusing. That was real confusing to me, too. But you had to really pay really close attention.
Because it came out of nowhere for me. I heard people in the group online talking about it. And at first, I'm like, what are they talking about? Because I really wasn't noticing it until, like you said, it started to become obvious that, okay, wait a minute. The timeline is not linear here.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, in a movie, you can tell they're going to a flashback because things get kind of wavy or you see them staring off and then there's another scene. You know, in books, you need to put, okay, 1938.
Yeah.
So I know where I'm at now.
It was strange because Sigrid, you know, was in the theater when she met Egan. And it started to get weird. Like, okay, is this before the husband went off to the war or after? Because it seemed that was before he went off to the war.
Yeah, turns out it was before. I was wondering the same thing, and that's when I was thinking, like, wait a minute, this couldn't have been going on in 1943. She wouldn't be having to hide her affair. He'd have been gone.
Exactly. Yeah, so I didn't enjoy that aspect of it. I think that could have been handled better.
Right. And another thing, when she meets the wife and the children, mm-hmm. because when she was asking him about his kids, he says they were 5 and 3. Then she meets him years later, and they're 5 and 3.
They're...
So I'm like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I think it was trying to show, oh, this is how she realizes that there was kids. So that's the age that she told him, but that was back in time. So that
was an editorial mistake, or they didn't catch it in editing because it doesn't make sense. Yeah, they should have aged.
Just from what was going on in Berlin, that would have been several years prior. It would have been early on, or at least before 1940.
Right. Yeah. And what did you think, Roberta?
As Monica said, I got into it. It was a little off-putting at first, you know, to have to pay extra careful attention to what you were reading, mm-hmm. to find out where you're in time, because that's another one of my pet peeves with books. It's, you know, it's fine if you have like just a date or a year, and then when you're going to change it again the next chapter, that's fine. But I forget, there's some other book I've read recently, and they would have a date and a time at the beginning of chapter, but then in the middle of the chapter, someone would have like a little flashback. The only way you could tell is it went from plain type to italicized.
Right.
So you have to think, well, what was this, you know?
But at least there's some indicator. There's something to let you know, okay, some time shift is happening.
Time shift. But, you know, I know sometimes stories are best told, you know, flash back and forth. You get a better feel for it, that everything doesn't have to be in a real straightforward chronological linear manner. But just if the authors could just kind of let you know where you're at, because I hate to feel lost. You know, it keeps me maybe giving a book like a B- instead of an A, you know.
Right, right. For me, it was the narrative itself was dull. It's like you said, you know, you needed to pay extra attention because it was doing these
time shifts that without telling you. It was just kind of trying to weave it into one fluid narrative. But I found it overall too dull for me to really... I didn't connect with Sigrid. I didn't really connect with... It's like you're just telling me the story about what happened, but I never developed an emotional connection with it.
Well, none of the characters were very likable. You know, they all had some very serious flaws and quirks.
Well, they were living in a very, very just extraordinary time.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. They all had their things, and you don't know how much really is their realistic, you know, their normal type personality and reactions, and how much it has been brought on because this war has just seemed to go on forever and ever and ever to them. Sometimes you wondered during this novel whether this was some of the actions and reactions they have were part of their normal personality quirks and flaws, or whether they had been pushed to the limit and were acting differently, much differently from so-called normal because of all they'd had to endure for so many years. Because there in Europe, the war had been going on forever and ever and ever. And so
right.
A lot of the people, it was just all about surviving. That when I was younger, we lived in Germany for about 3 years in the late, you know, well, from 1957 to 1960.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most places have been cleaned up, but believe it or not, even at that time, like 12 years later, there were some areas where there was still rubble. I guess
wow.
The thing wasn't, some of these projects weren't like top priority. So there was still things where you could see that the things that happened from the war. Not many, because when we went to Germany, I thought it was one of the cleanest countries I'd ever been to. It is, you know, it's just spotless. You know, it's not like all these people littering here in the United States.
Right.
But I just can't imagine having to endure that all this time. It's even worse probably than our Civil War, where people had, you know, such miserable lives because everything was rationed or things couldn't get in. But and one time after we came back from Germany, we met a lady. She was the owner of this German restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she had left Germany right after the war. And she told me that, you know, things were so bad where she was, they even butchered and ate the zoo animals because there's just nothing left to eat.
Wow.
People, you know, from this book and other ones, this was, to me, this gave me more of an everyday level, even though some of them I got in tedious in parts descriptions. But it gave you an everyday level of how these people, just what they had to endure and what happened just to be able to survive from one day to the next.
Yeah, I agree. It was a unique look on that time in World War II. Because I don't know if I've ever read a book that was set in Germany from the point of view of Germans living in Germany at the time.
No, it's usually like, you know, somebody that to deal with the Holocaust or
mm-hmm.
hiding Jewish people. Nothing like the everyday, what they call themselves, the good Germans, you know.
Right, right.
All right. Actually, that's what I liked about it, because you don't get a lot of that. And like when Frau Rumke was actually, she killed herself, but she would have been taken because you weren't allowed to talk about Hitler.
Okay.
Negatively, you know.
Right. When she said that, when I read that part, I was like, oh, my God, she just killed herself.
Right.
Because I knew. What are you saying? Somebody's going to rat you out.
You know,
she knew because, you know, she then kills herself before they can get to her.
She shot herself. When at first she had a gun, she'd be, and I'm thinking, oh, she shot one of them.
No.
Like, if you're going to kill me, I'm going to kill at least one of you. I'm like, oh, she killed herself.
Oh, yeah, she killed herself.
I would have shot one of them. I would have been like, I'm going to be dead anyway.
I'm going to take at least one of you out. It was just a sad time, and I was reading and just trying to connect with what was going on, because it's like, but I don't know, I just think the author could have helped me more with the way he told the story, because it was an important story. I just found the narrative dull, and I wasn't really engaged with it. But when they were having to constantly go, you know, hide because of the air raids, I thought to myself, I can't imagine living like that. Living, you know, in fear, and you never know when this is going to happen, and you got to go hide in a cellar, and you know what I mean? It was just...
And then even that doesn't save everybody, as we saw at the end, you know?
Yeah.
The best shelter in the world is not going to save you if, you know, you take a direct hit.
Exactly. That must have been awful. I can't imagine.
To live in constant fear, you know, you fear just about every night, you know, there were bombings, so.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, I think, you know, the way Sigrid's character evolved, because at first, I don't know that she, you know, it was like she's having this affair, and then her and her mother-in-law, but she was a character.
Oh, well, yeah, that mother-in-law was a piece of work, let me tell you.
And then she, you know, finds out what's going on with, what was the girl's name? The nanny or babysitter?
Cole. Right. What was her last name? Erica.
Erica. And she finds out what's going on, and then, you know, she starts to care, and she starts putting herself at risk to help.
Yeah, I think her eyes were finally open to what was going on around her, and she kind of got out of her little shell that all she had was, like, her job and her her difficult mother-in-law. You know, and having to deal with her these rationings and horrible food and everything. So this was something I think she finally got out of her shell and felt like she could at least attempt to try to help, you know, other people.
Right.
But I said, but that mother-in-law, I tell you, you know, that would be problematic enough. That would be almost as worse as the bombings that you had to go home from work every night and fit your mother, deal with a mother-in-law like that. Because, whew. That woman didn't have a nice thing to say about anybody.
Except
maybe her little coffee klatch buddies, but she probably talked behind their back about them too. Because she was just mean, you know. Yeah. She was just mean, and even when her son came home, first she was fawning over him, but I don't think she was that thrilled for him to be home. You know,
she's just mean and miserable old woman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, she'd let her. Pretty rough life, because this was I guess she was old enough. This was the second war she'd been through. She had to have been through the First World War too,
mm-hmm.
and that was pretty.
She was probably Sigrid's age when World War One was going on, right. And you know, a young mother. Her husband was probably off in war, and who knows what happened to him.
Right
there, and then after that, Germany had to make reparations. So then they produced their own money. So I mean, you had wheelbarrows full of money just to buy a loaf of bread. So they lived in such bad time, after the war, that you know she did have a very difficult life.
Yeah,
and I feel like, I mean, just with the fact that he didn't explain a lot, I feel like I understood it because I've studied this.
Right.
In history classes, but if you don't have a background knowledge on what's going on, I would have been really
lost. Yeah.
I'm like, okay, what's going on? So I think he, you know, kind of maybe expanded his audience, maybe because he has a deep background in history, and so maybe he's not thinking everybody doesn't know what I know about what's going on here.
Yeah. I think in our group, the majority seems to not like it. It was hard for them to get into, and that was a lot of the comments. And but there are some people who did, like you, Roberta, you, Monica, and who else said they liked it? I think Marianne.
Yeah, since it's her pick, I would hope so. but then, you know, some picks turn out different than what you think. So
yeah. But I think the majority just couldn't get into it or didn't enjoy it much. And well, I can understand that because the way it was written, like I said.
Yeah, I can understand their feelings. I said, just the thing for me is I just appreciated getting to see the in how these individuals that weren't heroes or heroines, how these horrible times, what effect it had on them, and how some of them changed and some of them didn't.
So any memorable scenes, any favorite characters?
Well, like I said, I didn't care for anybody a whole lot because they all had some, not that we don't have our own little quirks and flaws, but still when someone's, you know, some of their things are played up, it was really hard to care for any of them. At first I thought, well, maybe I'd like Casper after he came home, but he really, you know, he kind of freaked out. I guess he'd say now he was having post-traumatic stress syndrome, and he was wounded and he should have been able to stay home, but what does he do? He goes back off to war again, you know, wounded.
Right.
But I think he had seen so much and so many horrors and everything that he didn't feel like he could live in the real world right then. You know, he couldn't live this quiet life with his naggy mother and, you know, his wife who he knew, you know, had problems. Mm-hmm. That it's, even though it was horrible, it was easier to go back to the horrors he knew than stick with the ones at home.
Right.
And he had his own reasons for wanting to go back, but I just couldn't understand. If I had an out from a war, I certainly would take it and stay home as long as I could.
Yeah.
I think my favorite was Erica, even though she did a lot of, I guess, what people would call questionable behavior. Mm-hmm. I think she did that because she had to, you know, and the German man she was getting papers from threatened her. I mean, if she didn't sleep with him, she'd go to the end up in the camps too, because it's a crime to help Jews out. So, I mean, she was pretty much forced into it. Right. You know, and those pictures she took, she needed the money because, you know, these people didn't have the, with the food rationing going on, they were starving. So she did everything that she could to help other people, even with her own personal sacrifices to do that. That's why I found her to be my favorite character. My least favorite character is, of course, the mother-in-law. I just didn't like her.
I don't know who would like her. Oh, my God.
Unless you were a mean person yourself, you know, you could relate to it.
And going in and taking her neighbor's radio after she, and just her attitude after she was killed was like, well, she was a snob.
Okay. And then she was in there listening to the very broadcast that, you know, she was a total hypocrite too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Seeger comes in and catches her listening to the radio, to the stuff that she, you know, acts like she has no interest in.
Yeah. I think he put that in there to show Germans knew what were going on to the Jews.
Yeah.
They may say they didn't, but they knew. They were told. I mean, granted, the camps happened outside of Germany, but they were aware of what was going on. And, you know, the United States has said they didn't know what was going on. There was newspaper clippings showing they did. So the kind of "we didn't know" excuse has been pretty much shown that hasn't been the case during World War II.
And the fact that she, you know, was sleeping with a Jew, it could have been a much better book. That would be my final thought.
Yeah, I would have liked more on that with, like, her being in danger because of that, because that was such a crime.
Yeah, but it was just like, oh, that's what struck me, I guess, you know, with that whole first part of the book. Like, the first third, I would say, was just, it was kind of cavalier. I mean, they're hiding, they're screwing in the cinema, you know, it's like, I mean, seriously?
Yeah, and, you know, she was breaking the Nuremberg laws. You could not have any sexual relations with a Jewish person. Now, the German soldiers could rape a Jewish woman. Mm-hmm. That was different. But you couldn't, you know, you couldn't engage in that because they didn't want offspring.
Right.
They were trying to
have
keep them separated
race.
And purify the race. So, you know, they didn't want a good German woman to produce Jewish offspring. And that's why they're even having good Jewish women have offspring from good German men to keep, you know, the population, the Aryan population going. So, you know, he really put that in there and showed kind of what the Nuremberg laws were about, but without saying, yeah, these are the Nuremberg laws, which, you know, I enjoyed the historical aspects of it.
Yeah, it's always interesting to look back at something in hindsight with the perspective of knowing it's over and, you know, had a beginning and an end. Okay, so I guess that's going to be our take on City of Women by David R. Gillam. Be sure and come back next month when we will be discussing Someone Knows My Name by Lawrence Hill. And I think we're really looking forward to that one because we're going to have the author joining us on the podcast next month.
Yay!
So that should be very interesting. And that book has, you know, gotten a lot of raves. So I'm eager to check it out. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.